I never know how to start these off. Because, like, we used to do that thing where we would, like, I would just start recording in the middle of you guys talking about something. And it was always just fun to interrupt and be like, well, welcome to Legendary Lasses.
How would that fucking start when I was talking about shit earlier?
Well, we weren't recording.
I know, we should have, but that was so funny.
Yeah, except there's really no way to tie up that story because there's nothing you know about it. Well, welcome to Legendary Lasses. I'm Ashley.
I'm KB.
Oh my god. Oh, and I'm Sally.
That's one way to start a show, I guess.
It's all downhill from here, Ashley.
Well, I hope not, because I worked really hard on this at like 3 a.m. So originally the plan was to carry on with the witch trials. And then my shit went a little haywire this week, and it's boring, but I've been working a lot. So, instead of that, we were gonna do a palate cleanser, and then I couldn't sleep. So, I have a script ready, and we're gonna talk about a legendary lady.
Cool.
I kind of hinted at this in our context episode for when we needed a palate cleanser, so...
Mm. Oh, great. Let me just go back to that episode right now.
I mean...
Oh, you remember what I did 2 days ago.
Yeah, I mean, same honestly.
Yeah.
I'm just curious if you guys have any, guesses about who we're going to talk about.
If this is the Catalina episode, I am going to lose my shit. In a good way. Like, not a bad way. A great way.
Okay, in a good way. Okay. It's the Catalina D'Arasso episode!
Yes!
Oh, yeah! Is this one that, like, that I said that she was a handsome woman?
She's a handsome gal.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know who we're talking about. Yeah.
So I want to just put it out there up front that I've used a lot of they pronouns in this, but I don't think I've got them all. So if there is like a she or he in here somewhere, apologies. I will say with that,
is it like a similar to like a Dr. James Miranda Berry kind of situation?
It is, except that Catalina herself will sometimes flip back and forth between the pronouns. Calling herself she or he. Mm-hmm. So I'm really unsure of how to address her.
So I think they would probably be the best.
Yeah. So I've used they a lot once we kind of get into her story a bit more. I will refer to her as she as we talk about her upbringing, but that's it.
Okay.
So are y'all ready for this? Revisiting
Catalina. Ready as I'll ever be.
Revisiting Catalina was a real experience. And I kind of forgot some of the stuff that she, or that they did. And it's shocking. But I think it's a really good in-between thing to kind of have some fun before we talk about other people dying a lot.
Yay.
Is KB frozen? Did we lose her?
I don't know. KB, you there?
Uh-oh. Hello?
Hi.
I think she's back.
She's back!
Yeah. Yay!
Great! Did you miss, I mean, what was the last thing you heard?
I heard, I'll use they a lot, but I will refer to her as she when something happens.
Oh, when we talk about her upbringing.
Okay. Makes sense.
Did we miss anything that you said?
No.
Okay.
Everything froze and I was like, remember the last thing said so you can say it when you're back, and that's all.
And you did it. I'm so proud. All right. Well, I also mentioned that the story is a little bit crazy because I kind of forgot some stuff that Catalina did, mm-hmm. and it's sort of shocking. So I would prepare yourself, but I think it's going to be a good, like, in-between episode before we talk about just more people dying because of superstition. Yeah. So, here we go. Catalina is most likely... well... it's a great start. Great start. Catalina is most likely born in 1585. There is some discrepancy that she could have been born closer to, like, 1590s. But most of the records that we have kind of... go to proving around 1585 is right. She was born to Miguel and Marie Perez, and both of her parents were born and raised and then raised their children in the Basque town of San Sebastian, Spain. We know that she had at least two sisters and at least one brother, but most likely more siblings that we just don't know a whole lot about. One of the few things we do know about her early upbringing that shaped her later life is the encouragement and at least semi-disregard of typical gender roles by Catalina's father. Which I think is interesting because I think we also see that in, what was it, Queen Christina of Sweden?
Yeah.
So we kind of gather this from records and some of Catalina's own writing that... this occurred, and it was because Miguel was a captain and possessed the military command of the Basque region, and he was appointed by King Philip III of Spain to do so.
Was her first phrase growing up was like, "Down with the patriarchy"?
probably something like that.
It would be like, "Oh, it's so cute."
It would be like the adorable 1500s version of that, which I'm not sure exactly... what that would be, but yeah. But it's interesting because Captain D'Arauso would regularly train his son or sons with Catalina in the art of warfare and strategy. So, again, a lot like Queen Christina of Sweden, she's kind of brought up in this, I'm going to say, quote-unquote, boy's world of the time, which is really cool. Beyond that, though, the next thing that we can kind of discover about Catalina is that she is taken to and resides at a Dominican convent with her sisters. And at this convent, she was basically brought there because her Aunt Ursula was the prioress. And I guess her family was busy. I'm not quite sure. She may have been taken there for, you know, education of some kind, but... there's really no exact reasoning of why her sisters were taken there. So this is, again, most likely 1589-ish. So she would have been about pretty young. She would have been about maybe 4 to maybe 6 when she was dropped off there. But Catalina did not like it. She... did not like living in a convent. She lacked enough religious conviction to make it her life goal to be a nun, and she hated the feeling of imprisonment that the convent gave her.
She had an authority problem. I can identify with that.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. It's interesting because I think I had read Catalina's memoirs right before or during one of my, I'll call more rebellious dislike of a professor, and I immediately identified with Catalina being like, this is bullshit. And KB, I hope you know who I'm talking about.
Because it would have been when we were in Arkansas still, right? No, it was...
No.
I thought this had been going on for much longer, but...
This would have been the first semester of UTD.
I mean... There are some suspects. I'll say it that way.
I'm going to give you a clue just so that I can see your reaction, and we'll probably just cut this out because it's more for me.
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
No! Oh, when you held up the book, I already knew. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Immediate dislike and rejection of all authority he could have possessed.
I was sitting next to you and I was like, number one, I didn't like it either, but also I was like, I can feel Ashley's reaction. Like, I didn't even have to look at you. I was just like, oh, yep.
And I immediately knew that my poker face was gone. It was just like, I try to, you know, put on a face and be like, it's fine. Mm-hmm. They're probably okay. That was an immediate, what the fuck? Oh, God. It was, and we all looked around the classroom at each other like, what the fuck? Anyway. So she did not like being in a convent. It's interesting because Catalina is described as being stocky, quick-tempered, and possessing a sharp wit. And I'm sure that at least the last two qualities are to thank for her often confinement or detainment in a cell at the convent and her constant war with another novice there. However... After she refused to take her vows at 15, Catalina suffered a beating by one of the older nuns, and this was the breaking point for our young novice.
And no! Catch these hands! Catch these hands!
And they begin...
Did she kick her ass?
Well, I'm sure she at least thought about it. It would not be too far off her MO, I will say. But this was the breaking point for our young novice and the beginning of the story for our cross-dressing androgynous hero. Most likely on March 18th of 1600, Erauso found the keys of the convent simply hanging in the corner
of one room. That's divine providence right there.
After the...
Oh.
Yeah, it that is sure divine. That is a sign from the universe.
Oh, absolutely. So after the nuns went off to their morning prayer, Erauso grabbed the keys, unlocked the door, and ran. Escaping the convent, Catalina hid amongst the natural landscape, and while hiding...
What if they just, like, left them there for her, being like, yo, we don't like her either. Let's just, like... put them in an obvious spot. So she can, like, run away.
You know, I will say it wouldn't be the only time it happened in her life. We'll get to some
stuff. People are just lucky. Some people are just lucky.
It's true. But while hiding in the landscape, Erauso cuts her hair short in the style of a young boy and then takes a week fashioning herself trousers and a shirt in the style of a young boy. Taking on this role, she made her way to Vittoria. Now, she's living pretty much as a fugitive at this point. She's a runaway from a convent. She would have been taken back immediately if she were found out. So, Erauso spent some time in Vittoria, but eventually finds her way to a doctor and professor, Francisco de Serralta, I believe is how it's pronounced, who happened to be married to her mother's cousin. However... The doctor did not recognize Catalina, and she would live with him for 3 months. And during this 3 months, Erauso picks up some Latin that is taught to her by the doctor. But then he starts becoming abusive. Abusive in what way? I'm not sure. So our young fugitive leaves. That's it. I'm done. She knows when to call it quits, I will say. So Arauso steals enough money for travel, finds a ride with a mule driver, and then makes their way to the court of Philip III. It's really just like climbing that ladder.
The hell?
Yeah. While there, they find work as a page boy for the king's secretary. And after working for 7 months as a boy, Catalina's father shows up at court looking for the king's secretary to discuss his missing child.
That's when you call in sick at work.
Catalina is literally in this room, would have probably greeted her father.
How did you not recognize her?
Arauso's dressed as a young boy. I don't know. I mean, and it would have been like, almost a year at this point. And it's crazy to think. But
10 months.
Yeah. Captain Arauso would describe his child's appearance and where this child went missing from, and never once realized that he had probably just spoken to that said missing child when he arrived.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, she kind of looks like that page boy over there.
About that same height, you know. And immediately Arauso leaves court. She literally ran away the next day. She would find work for 2 years in a different part, kind of like right outside the capital in the court, I believe. But they would work for 2 years with Lord Alonso de... Oh, here we go. Here we go, y'all. Okay. They would find work for 2 years with Lord Alonso de Areno. And Arauso mentions that while there, she was always treated exceptionally well. And was always dressed very well by Lord Alonso, given that salary to be able to dress well. And then, for some reason, Arauso goes back to San Sebastian, where she was born and grew up. While here, she lived as a man and would not be recognized by any family member she interacted with or even helped cared for in some instances. I mean, it's just crazy. It's insane. Like, how do you not recognize this person? Like, okay, it would have been right about probably 3 years since Arauso ran away. So she's probably about 18. Or they're probably about 18. I don't think, like, you don't change an appearance between those years that much.
You might get, like, taller right? and kind of...
Like, she just...
You know, a little bit, but your basic face shape would be the same.
Yeah. Yeah, like, they got a haircut. That's it.
Yeah, and Arauso is, I mean, always pretty much described as being stocky, so shorter and, I mean, just a unit, but just short. An absolute unit of a person, just a very short unit. Anyway, eventually Arauso leaves San Sebastian again and makes her way to Seville. Seville? Where she finds work as a cabin boy on a ship heading to the New World. Yep, we're in the New World, you guys. The captain of the ship was another cousin of her mother.
Of fucking course it was!
I just don't know how, like... there's so many run-ins with family, and I don't know if it's like, everyone just pretend you don't know it's Catalina so that she feels good about it, or if it's...
Or they just didn't know, or what if her mom just has a huge family, because like, my mom has like 60-something first cousins, and like, I know maybe 10, like, what if she's like, every time like, I go to like a family thing on my mom's side with like all her cousins, they're like, who do you belong to?
Who do you belong to? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's also very possible, I would say. It just seems strange since Catalina seems to know these people and how they're related to the family.
Yeah.
So it tells me that she at least had some contact with them or knew of them and they have
What if they probably met when she was itty bitty
and she's Which is also probably a case. Yeah. Anyway, according to her memoirs, she left Spain for the New World on Holy Monday, 1603. It's interesting to me that there's certain times throughout her life or their life that important religious days are also mentioned. I like beginnings of new chapters of their life. So I don't know if some of that is like, you know, self-curating this identity. Or if it's maybe actual.
I think it's more of just like, because I know there are times where I'm just like, probably like there's someone who was born like around a holiday, like, oh, I'm born around Christmas. Yeah. Or like, something like that. It was Holy Monday, which is.
It's also a way of like landmarking time, if that makes sense. Like, that would have had to be around.
Yeah. Because it, like, I mean, calendars weren't like, oh, it's October 12th or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It just seems strange to me, I guess, that they kind of coincidentally line up with things. And because there is some debate about some of their adventures, I will say, it kind of makes me wonder if some of it is that, like, self-mythologizing about you know, your life, and like it was important, and it was important because of like this, but hey, it also happened on a holy day
with Artemisia,
so I don't know. Yeah absolutely. So the entire time they are on the ship and in the New World, Arauso would live and dress like a man. There are even some records saying that she quote unquote dried out her breasts with some sort of secret ointment.
How?
That I don't know. I don't know. But we do know that Catalina is at least binding at this time.
That would make sense.
Yeah. I have no idea what this ointment was. It's not very clear in anything that is accessible. And I don't believe there's been much research done on it, because why would there be? I don't think anybody would use anything like that today, so. Anyway, after making it to the New World, though, Arauso sort of thrives, and not always in a doing the right thing kind of way, but always interesting. It's just very interesting to me that there are people like Arauso who seem to thrive in this chaos and instability, and, I mean, do okay for themselves. literally, the day they made it to what is now Venezuela, the ship is attacked by a fleet of Dutch pirates who Arauso helps defeat. Her memoirs make it seem like she did it almost single-handedly. Some other reports also kind of back that up, that she may have really done some, I mean, just wrecked shop. But after that, the crew goes a bit more inland as they can on the ship. Unfortunately, 9 sailors died due to inclement weather, but they were finally able to board the ship, or board the silver onto the ship that they were coming to collect for Spain, and planned to set off that same day. But before they could set sail for Spain, Arauso shoots and kills her cousin, the captain of the boat, and steals 500 pesos, and then tells the crew, "The captain has sent me on an errand. I'll be back." Arauso fled, and the ship soon left for Spain, leaving Arauso behind. What happened to the captain? I have no idea. So, like I said, not always doing the right thing, but really thriving. After fleeing, Arauso makes their way to what is now Panama, where she finds steady and good work with a rather well-to-do merchant. On one venture with this merchant, Arauso accompanies them to Ecuador, where the ship is shattered to pieces due to high winds and high waves. Erauso saves herself, or themselves, pardon me, and their employer by swimming to shore and dragging the employer with them. The rest of the crew and all of the goods perished. So they had to find something new. The good news is that they would settle in Peru, or what is now Peru, on what sounds like a farm. There's a description of grain, sheep, fruits, cattle, and tobacco, being brought up on this land. And here, the merchant would give Erauso their own home, a large salary, as well as 3 black slaves. Like I said, not always doing the right thing, but considered to be thriving at this time, which is horrific, and I can't even get into that. Yeah, it's rough. However, trouble does not leave our hero alone very long. And I think it's pronounced Sana? It's S-A-N-A, but there's a little over the N.
Sanya.
Sanya.
The tilde makes a nya sound.
That was my second guess, and I thought I was stupid and wrong. Okay, anyway, in Sanya, while attending a comedy theater, a young man insults and threatens Erauso. Do you guys have any guesses of what she would do in response? Yeah. So in response, our hero issues the challenge of a duel. This duel did not go very well for the young man who threatened Erauso.
Of course. She kick, because they kick ass.
Yeah. During the fight, Erauso would cut pieces of the man's face off. Completely off.
And she's Mike Tyson all of a sudden?
And due to the grievous bodily harm inflicted by Erauso, they are arrested. Her employer petitioned... Yeah, like, I mean, as you should be. Like, let me state that, as you should be. But...
Like, she is straight up chaotic. They're straight up chaotic. Not chaotic evil, just chaotic.
It's just chaos.
Chaotic. Yeah. I hit my mic. Chaotic.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to feel about this, being a chaotic neutral myself.
I'm... It's really interesting to see, like, if we let our chaos really take over, what would ensue? And I think we would just watch the world burn for fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep y'all from becoming Catalina.
Have you seen the children, like, walking through a store and they're, like, on the leash? I feel like that's...
Yeah. But we have those, like, bungee cord leashes where she, like, lets us go even a little bit further. And then she's like, nope. Well, it's interesting because Erauso... I'm going to stop calling her Catalina at this point as well. Because during this time, she's going by a bunch of different names. Including using her brother's name. Because apparently she thought that would be fine, even though he was in the military and coming to the New World. It's fine.
How does one keep up with all these aliases? Do they have a Rolodex?
I mean, they must have had something, because literally every town she's using a different name at this point.
Oh my god, like H.H. Holmes!
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it really is kind of an H.H. Oh no, yeah, it is.
That Disney Channel original movie that's about, like, I think it's called Motocrossed or something, but... Where the sister, her name's like Andrea, and her brother's name is Andrew. He goes by Andy, but she like takes his place and says, "Oh, yeah. I'm Andy, whatever." Yeah, that's what that reminded me of.
Yeah, and she dresses as her brother to compete in the motocross competition. Yeah, 100%. This is the I'm gonna say the R-rated version of that. but no, it's interesting because Erauso at this time kind of already has a KB in place, and that KB is her employer. So Arauso is arrested, and her employer petitions for her release and even gained the support of the local bishop to back the petition. But there's one caveat to their release.
Oh, no.
She was to be married to Donna Beatrice de Cardenza, who is the aunt of the young man she injured.
I see some problems with this.
Fearing?
It's a little bit of a problem. Yeah, he's going to run to a big surprise.
It's a little bit of a problem. Fearing that they would be found out, they refused the marriage, would spend a little bit more time in jail, but would end up being released early anyway. With the employer, they then leave town and travel to, I believe it's pronounced Trujillo? We're going to go with that. Where they set up a new shop and started running that together. Not long after, though, the same young man shows up to Arauso's home, but this time he brings friends with him. They challenge Arauso to another duel right outside her home, their home, pardon me. But this time, one of the young man's friends is killed. Not injured, killed in the street.
Wait!
Arauso ends up back in prison, unsurprising.
No. Wait, hold on!
They came to their house.
Like, they...
Yeah.
And they're like, fight. And then she's like, all right. Like.
Yeah.
You told me to jump and I said, how high? And now I get in trouble for it. Yeah. No, I'm in trouble for it.
Here's the thing. Yes, she was issued a duel that she took place in. Duels are illegal. They shouldn't be doing it anyway. But then she also killed a man in the street. Which murder is illegal in the New World still, surprisingly.
Listen, who started this fight?
I mean, Arauso, technically.
No. Those dudes that came over that challenged the duel started the fight. They were just defending themselves.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You're right. I mean, it's fine, though, because she's released.
They felt threatened. They wanted to get rid of the threat.
I mean, when you write, you write.
Thank you.
But they would be released again by the help of their employer. This time, though, the employer has kind of had enough, and he only gives them money, a letter of recommendation, and a one-way ticket to Lima, which is kind of where, when you said the thing about the convent keys of someone just kind of leaving them there, this is what I was talking about, where I think people just kind of have enough of her and are like, go, just go. But anyway, once in Lima, Arauso gives this letter of recommendation to another wealthy merchant named Diego del Solarte, I think, Solarte. After a few days, they're given the shop to run by themselves. Arauso would be in charge of this shop for 9 months, but would be fired after being discovered, quote-unquote, fondling a woman who just so happened to be the sister of their employer's wife.
You gotta get it
somewhere. Not where you work!
Yeah. Were both parties consenting to it?
From the description, yes.
I don't know.
I mean, it's still a complete, I'm going to say a complete failure of good judgment. Because it is a relation to your employer. You shouldn't be taking advantage of a young lady at this time anyway.
Yeah, like I was about to say, like, is everyone of age?
I believe so. But again, Arauso is dressed as a man.
Yeah.
At this time, it was improper to
canoodle.
you know. You know. Yeah. Canoodle. So, Arauso is fired.
Is this the first account of something like this happening, or,
like a first relationship thing?
No. Like something of this nature happening before. Is this the first account of this happening, or is this... Am I making sense?
Is this the first account of Arauso being with a woman? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, or just being someone in an intimate matter. I don't know.
There's some allusions to other things.
Yeah, because
Yeah.
You can go.
I was gonna say I've left them out because there's a period where Arauso is kind of I'm gonna say de-lesbianized, to quote another scholar I'll mention later in the script here. And more heterosexual relationships are sort of made up.
Okay.
So it's not clear exactly one way or another.
Okay.
This seems to be at least the first most accurate, I'll say.
Okay.
But it is pretty well recorded that
she got around.
It didn't matter which team they were on, if you know what I mean.
They loved everybody.
Oh, yeah. She was a lover and a fighter. So after being dismissed from the shop, Arauso found new friends with a recruiting officer for the Spanish military, where she would quickly enlist with the Spanish army, whose aim was to, well, currently at the time, conquer Chile. With the army, Arauso proved themselves to be a vicious aggressor and complete conqueror, which unfortunately was only shown through the massacre of the indigenous peoples. Arauso quickly earned a reputation for bravery and skill with most weapons, which would actually earn them recognition by the Spanish crown. This is all while never being discovered to be a woman or a runaway nun. Arauso would even run into one of their brothers while camped with the military for a night. And after spending the evening drinking and chatting with their sibling by the fire, he would never recognize his runaway sister.
The fuck?
Which is, insane. I feel like even if I hadn't seen my brother in, I don't know, at this point, maybe, 10 years. If I ran into him, or he ran into me, and we spent a whole evening just, drinking beer and catching up, I feel like we'd recognize each other, right? Apparently no one in this family gave a shit about each other.
Holy moly.
But, unfortunately, I'm skipping over a little bit here because some of it's not really relevant to what I want to talk about, and I really want to get to where she talks to the Pope. That's where we're going.
What?
Yes, ma'am. So, unfortunately, Arauso would be passed over for a promotion to captain, and at this time, her current rank would have been second lieutenant. She makes it to second lieutenant, which is huge. But Arauso seems to have gone on a rampage after this incident of being passed up for promotion. Now, there are good reasons and well-documented reasons that she's passed up for a promotion, one of them being cruel treatment against indigenous peoples who lived alongside the Spanish. Like I said, not always doing the right thing that we think about, but really thriving in the New World, I would say. Until this happens. Arauso basically saw this pass of promotion as an attack on everything else that they had proved to be. The frustration would lead to a period of time where Arauso was devoted to vandalism, burning of crops, and killing anyone they met on the road.
Vandalism.
I'm just going to say that
arson,
again.
Arson.
Just going to say that again. She would straight up murder anyone she came across on the road. Didn't matter.
They're crazy. They need to just, take it down a couple notches.
Yeah. Well, in Concepcion, she assassinates the chief auditor of the city which was met with another prison sentence where they would be locked in a church for six months.
60 years. 6 months. Like, what the hell? She has been a menace on wherever she is since this happened.
Yeah.
A danger to themselves and others.
Yeah. Well, upon their release, Arousa runs into her brother again. And this time...
Go on.
Challenges him to a duel for some reason.
Did they kill him?
But potentially over a mistress of his. Arousa murders her brother in the street and lands back in prison for a further 8 months.
What the fuck? Because I know something like the end of this story, and I'm like, how?
Yeah.
They are so lucky.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. Catalina.
Who is lucky in this situation?
Arousa!
Oh, yeah.
I'm flabbergasted. I don't remember this part of anything. So, but...
I mean, when I told you at the beginning that it's shocking, I was not joking.
I feel like I remember the highlights, just like...
Oh, my God.
So after...
They tried to make her a nun, and then she was like, no, and I'm not even going to be a lady. And then she they talked to the Pope.
Yeah.
That's what I remember. Yeah. And then all this middle stuff is like, oh.
Yeah. It's the middle part of the story that you're like, oh. She's, like, really cool, and, like, they're pretty badass, but also, like, oh... So after this prison sentence, Arousa flees the town and runs basically for their life into the Andes, where they are ill prepared to travel through. On the brink of death, Arousa is saved by a villager who then brings her to their village and sets her up to convalesce in a lady's farm. While they're convalescing, she promises marriage to not one, but two young village girls who happen to be the nieces of the lady who owned the farm she was convalescing in.
Oh my God!
I just, like, I don't know how she doesn't know to, like, I mean, there's...
Calm the fuck down!
There's just, like, a complete lack of judgment when it comes to, like, really important situations. You've been brought into this village, saved from death. Don't court this lady's daughters, okay? Just don't. Just don't. I'm sure there's other plenty young, nice-looking women in the village. You don't have to pick these two girls. I don't understand. But anyway, instead of doing that, Arousa flees again, leaving the two girls in the village, but taking their money and their gifts of clothes from Holland, which would have been an expensive gift at this time. She then later re-enlists with the military, which I don't know how that was allowed to happen. And unfortunately would participate in mass killings of indigenous peoples as they're conquering the New World. She would be accused of another crime. This one she actually didn't commit. Would be tortured, never discovered to be a woman. Killed another man during another duel. And this one, I believe is... Let me just double check my notes here. Oh, nope, that one's coming up. There's so many duels, you guys. Okay. Kills another man during another duel where she would actually be sentenced to death instead of just a prison sentence. But fate steps in again and saves our heroes at the very last possible minute.
Fucking
what?
set a fucking course. Course fate steps in another time.
At the very last possible moment, a deposition comes through, calling for the immediate execution of a different prisoner. So Arauso is taken back to her cell. They flee and find sanctuary at a church for 5 months. I don't know how she got out of her cell. That's not really discussed a whole lot. Hides in this church for 5 months until they have an affair with a important man's wife in that town, are found out, challenges him to a duel outside his home, kills him. Arauso is then sentenced to death once again. And seeing no other way, she pretends to confess her crimes and is going to tell the bishop everything. Except she steals a consecrated host and flees town once again, returning to Peru.
What? Just because she can? The fucking thievish, killinist.
This is... Like, I appreciate the chaos. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But, like, at least, like, myself and you, Ashley, yeah, as chaotic neutrals, yeah, we know when to stop.
She does not have a filter, no.
I'm just...
Yeah. So, it's interesting that at this time, Arauso thinks that they're going to just confess everything, that this is the last possible moment for them because they have no other way out, and then flees. But in 1623, Arauso would find themselves in that same position again. They are being held prisoner once again, and this time with truly no way out, Arauso tells the bishop, "I'm ready to confess my crimes. By the way, I'm a woman. By the way, I fled a convent in Spain." This confession leads to a review and investigation where Arauso was examined by a group of matrons who confirmed that they were indeed a biological woman and still a virgin. Why no. That was important, I have no idea. Do I believe it to be true? Absolutely not.
Yeah, so I was like...
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
No way. But Arauso would be quickly shipped back to Spain after this.
Yeah.
2 years later... Later? 2 years later... Oh my god. I can't even talk. Okay. 2 years later, Arauso would petition the Spanish crown for further compensation for her efforts in the New World. This is via a Services and Merits Act that was around at the time. At the same time, Arauso petitions the Catholic Church for her right to remain in men's clothes until her death. This petition would go so far as a personal invitation to Rome from Pope Urban VIII. Not much is known about their meeting or what was said, and some scholars do debate on whether the meeting actually happened or not. However, based on her memoirs and the fact that her file for Services and Merits is filled in 1625 or 1626, it does match up with her accounts being at least being in Rome at this time. So it's very possible that it did occur. Her memoirs would be written or dictated, but remained in manuscript form until its first publication in Paris in 1829.
Wow.
Yeah. Arauso's adventures would be idealized and romanticized for a while, which is where we get the quaint title from Thomas de Quincey, the Ensign Nun or the Lieutenant Nun. When you look for Arauso's biography or memoirs, this is the title that comes up the most in English, is the Lieutenant Nun. Her life is also used as inspiration for comedies and satires, which I think is strange, considering the chaos she inflicted.
Yeah.
And it seems to be more it seems to be, you know, more of like a Shakespeare cross-dressing comedy sort of thing rather than actually gotcha. Talking about their life. Mm-hmm. However, what has plagued scholars is the most is the identification of gender and sexuality during this New World time frame. What did this look like? Is Arauso a rogue character at this time? How many other people are doing this? Has really been a question that historians are looking for. What I personally find interesting is Arauso's use of both masculine and feminine pronouns in her own memoirs. Now, I will say this could be a problem of translation, because it's been translated to many, many different languages since 1829. And the fact that we kind of lost the memoirs for a while, and there's kind of been a resurgence of looking into her, you know, there's that time period where we don't know much, you know, we don't look into her, so bad translations could have been made, right? Mm-hmm. It could also be a deliberate agenda of putting this sort of gender fluidity onto this character, who, from my point of view, does seem to live a purely masculine lifestyle, even after she's found out. I forgot to mention, during this meeting with the Pope, she actually wins that petition and would be able to wear trousers the rest of her life.
Well, yeah, pants are just more comfortable than dresses. I'm sorry. I talked about this. Like, my thighs touch. I can start a fire with them if I don't have something between them. Like, I need something.
Yeah. Yeah, so by all accounts, Arauso never showed any interest in returning to what we think of as a feminine life of the time or dressing like that. I will say, though, there are some accounts of her being in the New World and escaping. Some of her fleeing may have been through use of dressing as a woman and leaving town. And then dressing back as a man. Because there are some reports of soldiers who would have known her out so well, thinking they saw them in a dress. And then seeing them a couple days later in a new town and not really being sure where they were. So there is that. It's interesting, though, that throughout the 20th century, there's kind of this rediscovery of Arauso. And in the 1940s, it's romanticized to be this, like, femme fatale character. It then goes through this period of what scholar Sherry Valesco calls a de-lesbianized period, which I mentioned before. Valesco thinks that this is where inventions of heterosexual relationships began. And then a re-lesbianized period in the 1980s of a quote-unquote melancholy lesbian whose lover dies and a voyeuristic lesbian whose narrative ends with an optimistic image of the protagonist accompanied by the object of her sexual desire. Weird, I know. But I saw KB's face. That last part I don't really understand too much because I don't think... I mean, We don't really know a lot about Arauso's sexuality, I will say, because there have been inventions. So anyway. Matthew Goldmark, on the other hand, takes the approach of examining Arauso's accounts of merits and services document, the one that she petitioned the Spanish crown for compensation, and in particular looks at the habits section of the document. And he's looking for... Arauso's sexual orientation or identity. So habits would have been like vices. So anything listed there would be helpful for us to discover, is she going to brothels? Is she, you know, doing things? I couldn't find much more on Matthew Goldmark's work, though. So I'm hoping maybe it's going to be accessible at some point soon. This section, what I did find, though, is that the section gives accounts from witnesses and other people who Arauso would have known or spoken to during the petitioning of the Spanish crown and the Pope. So there would have been witnesses to Arauso's character at that time. And it documents how Arauso and others navigated ideas of gender and identity with her filling it out. But it's not great because it's a military record, really.
I imagine so it we just don't says have habits
much in the way of that.
Killing people. Like, it's Or habits, no, because she didn't want to be a nun.
Chaos.
Habits, no.
Habits, chaos, anarchy.
Yeah, really.
Arson.
Yeah. I think what really, truly captured everyone's imagination about Arauso, though, is a sort of anti-Joan of Arc figure. Because we have another woman in the military, but this time they're solely out for their own gain and own fortune. They murder in cold blood, and by all standards, I would say live a fairly average of what I would expect a single man in the New World to live. Where, you know, piracy and massacres are a daily thing. Arauso really thrived. And they spent some time in prison, but who didn't? And I think it's really interesting, this sort of anti-Joan of Arc figure. I want to know what you guys think about that idea.
I have questions about some of these figures like who, like we talked about James Miranda Berry, how he sort of wanted to get into these fights and stuff like that. And I don't know if it's like a, I'm living my life as a man, so I need to, like in Mulan, when Mushu's like,
assert you gotta confidence. Like,
get in there and be, yeah.
Find the biggest guy and punch him. I don't know
if
it
starts as that.
Yeah.
Or if they have some kind of innate, like, I want to punch a dude that makes them turn to this life in the first place. That's something that's interesting to me that I don't know will ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've wanted to punch a dude. Yeah. I mean, I've wanted to punch a dude so bad I might try dressing as a man to do so. But yeah, no, I think that's a really interesting point. And I think it's interesting to me that both Catalina and Dr. James Miranda Berry, who are kind of known for getting into tussles, are both described as being quick-tempered or hot-headed. And I don't know if that's, I feel like when we say like hot-headed, we typically do refer to men that way. Where like if a woman would get quickly angry, it's kind of something else. And I don't think we really call it that.
It'd be like emotional.
Emotional. Yeah. Or like, oh God, what is that? High maintenance, I think, is another one that's used a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. So I think it is interesting that we use kind of that more like masculine description for their temper. You know, maybe that is just because they do exhibit more masculine aggression. But I think that's a really good point, KB.
To what you said about, like, the anti-Joan of Arc, it's interesting to me, like, Joan retains her femininity at the end of her life. And the only way she becomes, like, legendary is through her death and martyrdom. And yet she didn't do really anything wrong. Like, you know. But then we get this example of Catalina.
Mm-hmm.
Who is allowed to just be more masculine, continue to be more masculine, and just straight up murders people. Like, it, by all accounts, doing the wrong thing over and over again, but is not burned at the stake. Or even, I mean, almost gets killed a couple of times, but, like, never does. Yeah.
is somehow given enough freedom to flee the prison.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a point to my ramblings about this, but like that's just a. It's not fair. I know life's not fair, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, I think that's something that I think about a lot, too, in coming up with this idea of the anti-Joan of Arc figure. Because I think when I think of the end of Joan of Arc's life, I think demure, eloquent to defend herself, and a little bit more feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if Erauso was in that situation, I don't think it would have been as demure.
Mm-hmm.
I would not expect eloquence. I would expect shouting or pulling a blade, possibly.
Yeah.
And a much more masculine reaction based on what I know about her from reading, right? So I do wonder if it has more to do with that show of masculine strength or... I keep coming back to the idea of masculine aggression for her. That it's not like... I don't know, like, yes, we see women kill throughout history, but for some reason this reads different. And it reads more, I hesitate to use the word tribalistic, but.
Yeah, because if you're using the term like anti-Joan of Arc, I feel like Joan of Arc is more, I'm on a mission from God.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Where Erauso is on a mission for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I made a Blues Brothers reference and no one acknowledged it, but okay. But yeah, that's it, and like what you're saying about like she seems more demure, and she's like you were like just not out for herself, and it just
I mean, then, literally ran away from God. She left a convent.
Yeah, and like she was just out for herself, and like doing everything for herself because she wanted to, which like more power to you. Just don't fucking kill everyone in sight.
Yeah.
Because someone looks at you the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, it's I don't really want to talk about this, but I kind of do because I feel like it's important. This rampage period that she goes on reminds me a lot of mass shooters.
Yeah.
Who are typically male. And that, like, break of what I'm going to call ego sends them on this mission to take as many lives as possible.
Like like a vigilante?
I'm wondering how she gets to this point. To that point of, like, being the mass shooter. Yeah, well, and I'm thinking back to, like, what we've talked about.
What was, like, the breaking point?
And so she runs away from this convent where obviously she was abused because she got beat up by this... none. Doesn't really do anything to her.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're talking about, like, later in life, absolutely would have beat this nun to a pulp. You know? So, like, obviously during the formative years, it's not the same kind of, like, I'll murder you or whatever. And then immediately when she runs away, she gets abused and abused by a family member. Granted, one that doesn't know that it's a family member he's doing it to, but still. So I'm wondering if it becomes this sort of, if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to be a man in this world, then I need to be like rough and tough and beating people up. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of...
a rough and snowballs rowdy boy.
From there.
Yeah. It sounds like... yeah.
No.
Yeah.
They didn't deal with their trauma very well, and I think they could have benefit from some therapy.
Yeah, most definitely. And yeah, of course, there is no help for any trauma that they would have experienced. I do want to say that I'm unsure that Catalina, I think you use the phrase, didn't do anything to the nuns at the convent. Because we don't really know much about it because she doesn't talk about it. But we know that she's always been quick-tempered and she's always had a bit of an authority problem from growing up in the convent. But, like, I would not put it past her to kind of wreck shop at that convent when she was able to. I think we also have to acknowledge that at the convent she would have been at the lowest rank possible, surrounded by many, many other people who would have had power over her, both physically and emotionally. Which, again, does, you know, put her in a precarious place to experience abuse. But we just really don't know her behavior at the convent, other than the few things that we mentioned at the beginning. I do not put it past that girl to wreck shop,
though.
Because
she talks so, I guess, candidly about when she does it.
Yeah.
Or, I guess at this point, it would be they. When they do it later, that, I don't know.
And, I think it's very possible that it's exactly what happened. She's also 4 years old when she's dropped off there and leaves at 15. So I think that, like, that age, I don't think that people really consider, how do I say that, but we have, like, teenage killers, but I don't think it would have crossed her mind at that point that that was an option.
Yeah.
Because of her age. So, we just see that, like, escalation throughout her life, but, I think it's a good point that you bring up that, like, to survive, I'm gonna have to be a rough and rowdy boy, and I'm gonna have to prove myself. Yeah. And they do, unfortunately, they do, for both good and bad, but, and it's so hard because we have all these questions, right, but we only have so much to look back on for her. And, I mean, even at this point, it's still, people want to say that it wasn't a real person, when we do actually have records from the military that describe this person as being a real person who lived and worked and killed and did all this stuff. So, I think it's also looking at the research that we do have and realizing that we're also fighting the fight to declare her a real historical figure.
Which to me is a little crazy for the 1500s and 1600s, because
it's gotta be tough.
I feel like we're getting into, like, that early modern period. We have obviously records that can prove people's existence at this point. It's not like King Arthur where it's like, oh, that might be just an amalgamation of, like, medieval kings or whatever. This is, like, during a time when we have records to be able to say, no, this person exists. So that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you can easily find her baptismal record from San Sebastian. There's a birth record of her. And then kind of the next thing we have is her enlistment. There's... You know, her aliases show up throughout history, or throughout this period of, you know, working as a ship's boy, right? Or as a page boy in the court. You know, those aliases do show up, and it's tracking those aliases as well, which I think makes it really tricky. But yeah, for sure, we at least have a Diarrauso that we can track throughout history, and see their medical, or their military record. We can see their merits and acts, services act. It's just really crazy to me that, like, we can look at these records and people still want to assume that most of it's made up, because her quote unquote adventures seem unrealistic, which I don't think it seems unrealistic for a man of the period. So yeah, It's very crazy. But it's definitely tracking the aliases mm-hmm. that they use throughout their life that I'm sure makes it very, very tricky. But yeah, I am very interested in this, like, anti-Joan of Arc idea for Catalina. And mm-hmm. definitely want to explore that and see if other people have written on it. I couldn't find anything about it while I was typing this up, but it'd be interesting to do, like, a paper comparing the two. Anyway, that's what I have on Catalina. What'd you guys think?
It's very interesting.
Mm.
I
feel like you're contemplative over the power of your own chaos.
Yeah.
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 Are you okay?
Yeah, I'll be fine.
This was supposed to be a fun episode before we talked about the deaths of a bunch of people.
No, it was just, I wasn't expecting this. Like,
Catalina's Lieutenant Nun, except baby. She wasn't a what nun. What were you expecting?
I know.
I feel like she would be expecting horrified by that title.
Yeah.
Like, Lieutenant, sure, but nun, really? Why?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting, too, because, like, a lot of sources want to say that, like, that was the original title, and it's clearly not. It's a pithy English title. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to know what was actually on the manuscript itself, because I've not been able to find that. But yeah, Sally, I feel like I've kind of broken you, and I feel bad.
I'm going to take a nap.
Okay.
But it was definitely interesting. It was a lot more than I was expecting.
Yeah. I kind of feel like maybe...
It was very chaotic.
It was very chaotic. I feel like maybe I should have talked about the other person instead that I had in mind.
No, I liked it. It was very interesting. I need to take a nap now. Not a depression nap, just a regular nap.
I have, like, this snippet of a memory of, like, being in your car and you telling me about Catalina while we were, like, driving to your parents' house or something. And remembering, like, you talking about how she goes back to her family afterwards. Like, she's chill with her family or something. Like, after everything, like, she's allowed to wear pants.
Oh, like, after everything? Like, after... Yeah. Yeah, I believe she dies in San Sebastian, so she died where she was born, which I think tells us that she was back with her family. I don't know exactly what I would have told you. Unfortunately, I don't have her autobiography with me. Yeah. This was...
But
recall
I just wonder,
from a
like,
lot of research papers that I
if
had
if you
before.
Killed your brother, how the hell is your family?
I don't think they would have told their family that. He was in the New World. It's a dangerous place, and he's in the military. He probably wasn't coming back, you know? It's most likely, too, that their brother had set up a life for himself there. You know, he may have had his own land, he may have had his own family at the time, so I don't know how long he was gone from the family.
Eek.
So it may have not really crossed their minds to even ask, to be honest. Yeah. So, yeah. Interesting, though. Interesting. There is a really good, snippet of her military career that I didn't cover on Stuff You Didn't Learn in History Class, which is another podcast. They covered Catalina, and they do a really good job of talking about some of her military record that I just didn't get to. So definitely worth listening to.
I'm glad we got the Catalina episode finally.
We did the Catalina episode finally. Who was surprised that I did another androgynous lady? No one.
I'm not.
Well, yeah, that's fair.
Who's shocked that it wasn't a Victorian lady?
But she is certainly modern, so.
I was.
Yeah. She is really modern, yeah. But anyway, I thought hopefully this was a good interlude before.
It was. Good. It was.
Well, I guess we should probably wrap up. Because I could talk about Catalina forever, but I'm also very tired.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to today's episode. Make sure to follow... What?
You're so, like... just really happy for what we just talked about. It's really good. I love it. Keep it.
Make sure to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Legendary Lasses. If you have any suggestions on topics or people you want us to cover, you can email us at legendarylasses@gmail.com. You can also visit our website at legendarylasses.wordpress.com, where we include notes, pictures, and links for each episode of the podcast. And we're now on several platforms. We're continuing to expand where our podcast is available. If you happen to use Apple Podcasts or any place that allows, like, reviews, please sure to rate us and leave us a review. And if not, we still love to hear feedback or from, you know, like, via email or Facebook, and just let us know what you think. Shoot the shit with us. Anything else, y'all?
I think that's it.
Cool. Well, go out, make waves, change history, and stay legendary, and kick some ass! But, like, don't kill people.
Yeah, try to hold on to your chaotic energy just a little bit more than Catalina did.
Don't be too chaotic, but just, like, a little, like, sprinkle of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just tie yourself to a lawful good who will keep you.
Like us.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I'm a lawful good by nature.
Yeah, like we did.
I can skew that way.
Yeah.
I feel like it keeps it just fun enough for you guys that I have, like, a little bit of chaos in me. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like you're lawful good, but tend towards, like, you're on that line of, like, true neutral and lawful good.
Yeah.
And, like, when you have to, you kind of skew a little bit more to keep us in line.
Yeah, just a little bit. Gotta,
but then you do have some fun and let us off a leash every
control
now and then.
Release.
Exactly. Yeah.
Controlled release, yeah, absolutely. Oh, God. I think we should leave it there. That was great. Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye.